The Nightjar by Deborah Hewitt, read by Tamarin Payne. Serban Archie, to infinity and beyond. Prologue. The pears in the orchard had ripened too early. Their swollen carcasses littered the grass, a rotting feast for the ants and fruit flies. He could smell the sticky juices from the terrace, mingling with the nauseating sweetness of the garden's wildflowers. It was too hot for September, and Helena's beloved hydrangeas were wilting. They lined the terrace like a guard of honour, heads bowed respectfully, and yellow-brown petals shedding in the late evening sun. Tires crunched over the gravel drive at the front of the house, and he stiffened, a tumbler of whiskey halfway to his mouth. The amber liquid caught the fading light, and its reflection danced like fire across his hand. He put it down without drinking and closed his eyes. The air was alive with moth wings and the rhythmic chirring of birdsong. A soothing white noise. Calm. Peaceful. A lie.
Sir? John?
His eyes snapped open. The boy, Vincent, the gardener's son, was trembling. His thin face was tanned and streaked with dust and tears. The boy's hand was anchored to the patio door, as though he were preparing to flee through it and into the safety of the house. Another lie. Nowhere is safe.
Sir, the police!
John stared at him blankly before nodding. The boy slipped back inside, his trainers crunching through the patio window glass strewn over the carpet. John looked down at himself, at the polished shoes, the dinner jacket and crisp white shirt. His tie had worked itself loose and his left cuff was undone. Police. He ought to greet them. He smoothed down his rumpled shirt and straightened his jacket, wiping the blood from his hands on the lapels. The music was still playing when he moved towards the house. A warped, tinny sound crackled from the antique gramophone and echoed through the hallways of Cranley Grange. Helena had gifted him the gramophone on their wedding day. He couldn't breathe. The music was still playing, but there was no one left to listen. All the diners were dead. He clutched at his chest. It was too tight. He couldn't breathe. He staggered across the terrace, stomach convulsing with cramps, and gripped the iron railings for support. He retched into the hydrangeas, but nothing could disgorge the images of the dining room from his mind. Broken shards from the mirror glittered over the lush carpet. Streaks of blood painted the upturned dining table, his mother's desperate fingerprints stippling the oak. His elderly father was splayed on the wing-back chair, spine bent backwards. His sister-in-law was slumped on the floor beside his brother's lumbering form. And there was Helena, cut down by the bay window, blood spreading out beneath her like a rose in bloom. If he had been home an hour earlier, he might have saved her. He stumbled down the steps to the lawn. No, he would not greet the police. He would not follow them back into that room. He would not show them the pale dove's feather in his pocket, stained pink at the edges, the calling card of the beasts who had slaughtered his family. Vincent's nervous footsteps pattered onto the terrace behind him.
Sir!
The police officers were hammering at the front door with increased urgency now. Soon they would discover the gate that led to the back of the house.
Sir, the baby is alive!
He wheeled around, and Vincent held the child out to him. Soft tufts of dark hair and brown eyes. Helena's eyes. He recoiled. From the child, the boy, and the awful, awful scene in that house. But there was something in the baby's hand. He frowned. It was a hydrangea. One of Helena's beloved hydrangeas. The wilted flower was clutched tight in a little fist. The pale stem was mottled brown, the faded petals withered and curled.
What's happening?
Murmured Vincent in awe. The baby's arm